The Subcommittee on Ethnic Councils will come to order. We do have a quorum. All four members are here. It is Monday, November 20th at 2 p.m. And the first thing on the agenda is to review, approve the minutes from the June 19th meeting. Does everyone have the minutes?
Yes, I'll move approval.
Okay. Representative Vogel moves approval of the minutes. Any discussion or questions? I just always make sure that my name is spelled right. And all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Next, I think what we want to look at the agenda. So the plan for the agenda, the search committee. Well, Greg, why don't you tell us a little bit about the process? It's not here on the agenda, but why don't you talk about it a little bit?
Madam Chair and members, I think it's been almost exactly 6 months since you last met and dealing with the same council. Hopefully better circumstances today. After the subcommittee terminated the employment of the former director, we established a search committee to manage the search process for the new director, for the successor. And it had six members, three members from the council, and then three nonpartisan legislative staff, Ms. James from Senate Council, Mr. McCormick from House Research, and myself. So we organized the process partly in the context that the statute for the ethnic councils requires that the LCC, which is the official funding authority, has to collaborate and work with the council in making the appointments. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of course, we would want that director to be suitable for the council because they have to manage that council and work with the board closely. Mm-hmm. We posted the vacancy on the executive branch's website because this is an executive branch position on August 14th. It closed 3 weeks later on September 11th. The applications were managed by Minnesota Management and Budget. There were 28 in all, and they determined that 13 of them met the minimum qualifications. The search committee met and looked at those 13 applications and decided to interview six of them. And after conducting those interviews, we forwarded three candidates to the African Heritage Council. The African Heritage Council held a public meeting on October 10th where each of the three candidates presented a short biography of their work and then responded to questions from the audience. There were a number of people at that meeting that thought there ought to be a broader venue for the candidates to meet with the community. And so the council worked with the African Leadership Council, African American Leadership Council, and held a forum on November 2nd. And there were about 45 people that attended that forum. It was a similar situation where the candidates presented themselves and then responded to questions. One of the candidates, Suzanne Madison, was traveling and unavailable. She prepared a video that was presented. There were some technical difficulties, so only about two-thirds of that video was presented. There was a poll conducted at the end of that forum, and the three candidates were ranked. Justin Terrell was first, and then the other two candidates. After that meeting, the board met one more time to review the applicants, and they also recommended Justin Terrell as their first choice. There was a slight difference in opinion about the other two candidates. And then last Thursday, the search committee met for a final time to review all of this information and had an extended conversation about what it ought to recommend to you. And after considerable discussion, they decided to recommend Justin Terrell as the sole candidate to this subcommittee.
I see that there are a few people here from the search committee that I recognize. Representative Rena Moran, who's a member of the council. Thank you for your work. And I see that Patrick McCormick is here from House Research. Is there anyone else here that I don't recognize? And you are?
Nasser. Yeah, the council's chair.
Chair of the council. I'm sorry, I didn't recognize you.
No problem.
Welcome. Is there anyone else? Did any of the three of you want to add any further comments about the process or about Mr. Terrell?
Not that I would. I think summarized up very well what has happened with the process, but I think
if you're going to say more than that, you have to come to the mic.
Yeah.
So we get it on tape.
So I will.
All right. Representative Moran.
So great. This summarized the process really, really well. But I just want to reinforce that it was a really long, thought-out, inclusive process that took way longer than we thought it should take, or that we wanted it to take. But we wanted to be really sure that we could find someone that could really represent the council well, who had strong relationships in a bipartisan way in the legislature, but who also was connected to the community and respected by the community also, to do the work that needed to be done that engaged the legislators, but also the community members in bringing an agenda. And we stress being able to do that in a very partisan way is really key, because that's important. That's
in a very nonpartisan.
Very nonpartisan way, because
I want to make sure she does.
Right, definitely in a very nonpartisan way, because that is the work of the council to do it in that manner. So we are excited to have him before you.
Senator Benson, Senator Representative.
That's right. Thank you. Representative Moran, the council decided to not forward more than one candidate. Can you help me understand, was it that you wanted to make a strong recommendation, or that there was such a disparity in the quality of candidates that you didn't feel that either of the other two were valuable for our consideration? Could you help me understand why we have one candidate?
Representative Moran.
Yes, thank you. So, well, there was a lot of conversation about that process, whether or not it should be one, should it be three, all three, or should it be two, or whether it should be one. And you know, we liked all three of them. You know, we think that the three that went forward were all good candidates in different ways. But it was more of a strong consensus coming from the community, but also coming from the board members and really the search committee also, that agreed that Justin was the strongest candidate and was the priority.
And Mr. Musa, Chair Musa, did you want to add anything?
Yep. I think, like Representative Moran summarized very well. So we looked at all qualification to the question of Senator Benson. We also looked at the community connection that the candidates do have and the quality work that they will produce. And we evaluated all types of qualification that they do have and came to the consensus that we will forward one candidate.
I had a question about you. You have an interim director right now?
We don't.
Oh, you don't have anyone at all? I thought you did have an interim director, so one of the staff people?
One of the staff is doing all things right now, but not, we don't have
But she interim. Didn't step in as interim director?
No.
Okay. And she didn't apply for the job?
No.
Okay. Any other questions for this chair?
Madam Chair, that was going to be my question, how they'd been functioning, because in the initial report, we were told it's been 6 months since we left or met, and so you can went to... that question, that's how you've been functioning for the last 6 months then.
Mr. Musa. Oh, Representative Moran.
So what happened was that we do have one staff member who work was to continue to work on engagement of the community, just because we knew that having the legislative report by January 15 was really, really important, and that should definitely have a nice amount of input that comes from the community and the work that we're doing to engage the community to inform the legislative agenda. And so what happened, the vice chair took on a role of supervisory for that staff member, and Nasser took on a role also. And you can explain your role.
Yep, yeah.
But the board members decided to, they would step forward it's instead of going through an interim process and then switching over to an ED.
Okay. All right. Any other questions for these two? All right. Thank you very much. Any other questions for Mr. Hubinger about the process? And we did last go around, I think the search committee also just recommended one person. Unfortunately, it didn't work out, but Senator Benson.
I was just looking at this entity will have a $400,000 budget, and I'm not seeing a finance question. I see.
I think we should have on the questions, we definitely should have at the end any other questions that the committee wants to ask.
I don't want this to take till tomorrow morning.
I know.
But I noticed there's a significant budget, and we have a lot of important criteria here, but I think a finance question.
So besides between number 15 and number 16, why don't we add a 15 and a half, okay, which is your experience working with financial budgets? And Mr. Hubinger, any?
No, I'm sorry. I think it's a great question. It might come up in when he's responding to question 5 about managing the organization.
Oh, okay. Well, let's do a follow-up there.
Let's do a reference to P&L responsibility.
Right. If he doesn't answer that, then let's plan on you doing a follow-up. Right.
Thank you.
Okay. Great. Let's see. I had another question. What was it? Mr. Hubinger, what is our authority as a subcommittee? Can we go ahead and make this higher? Because I know the LCC just met and probably doesn't plan to meet again for a while.
Madam Chair, the LCC delegated all of its authority to this subcommittee, so you have the appointment authority.
Fantastic.
There's a draft of a resolution in your package.
Okay. Just wanted to clarify that for the record. Okay, then if there's nothing else we have to do right now, why don't we bring in the candidate and start the interview? Put the tape on. Oh, there he is. Okay, Mr. Terrell, welcome. I'll let you get seated.
Thank you.
In the hot seat. And we'll just...
Sorry.
That's all right. We'll just let you get ready.
Thank you.
Do you need a pen?
I got it.
Just in case. We'll just introduce ourselves. I'm Senator Sandy Pappas from St. Paul, and I'm the chair of the subcommittee, and my colleague here.
I'm Senator Michelle Benson from Anoka, Isanti, and Sherburne County.
And Representative?
Representative Bob Vogel from Southern Scott and Western Lee Sauer County.
And I'm Representative Lyndon Carlson. I represent three communities in the northwest suburbs, Crystal, New Hope, and part of Plymouth.
Great. So we have some questions that you probably already answered for the search committee, but we haven't heard your answers. So we're looking forward to your responses. And I want to say welcome. And we're kind of excited that there was a consensus from the board and the search committee that you would be the only candidate that we would interview. So you can't hardly fail. So I'm going to, but we do want to learn more about you. So we're going to each take a question, and we're going to start with Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, I was wondering if you wanted to make any introductory comments before we started the questions, or should we just jump into the questions?
Well, I could, or you could make them for me. I mean, we are a subcommittee of the Legislative Coordinating Commission that have been given the responsibility to hire a director for the African Heritage Council. And we've introduced ourselves as two senators and two House members. As you know, this council was reorganized, restructured a couple years ago, and that we had one new director who didn't work out, and that the community has had a long process and looking at another candidate. So we're excited to have you here.
Madam Chair, I was wondering if he wanted to make any introductory comments.
Oh, if he wants to make. Why does he want me to make an introductory comment? Thank you very much, Representative Carlson. Of course, we could ask Mr. Terrell to make some introductory
Otherwise, we could
comments.
Just jump into the questions. That was my question. Should we just jump into the questions,
yes,
or did we want to give him an opportunity in a couple minutes to tell a
would
little
you
bit
like
about
an
himself?
Opportunity for some introductory comments?
Yeah, I would love
All
to.
Right, there we go.
I'll make them brief. I do have, Madam Chair, I do have six pages of notes here. I won't read
them. Please don't. I've already taken up so much of your time.
So, once again, it's Madam Chair, it's my, and Representative Senators, it's my members of the Council Commission Committee. My apologies.
That's it, we're a subcommittee.
Subcommittee, thank you.
It's I'm really excited to be here, if you can't tell. I come to this work from doing policy work and advocacy work, our social services work in the community, working with families like my own who struggle with the racial disparities that we talk about in Minnesota. And I also come to this work with a great deal of optimism, believing that Minnesota, we are well positioned to lead the country on showing people how you deal with these types of racial disparities. And the structure of the council, all the councils, are a tool that can be a bridge between the legislature and the community. And I'm excited to be here to talk about my abilities in doing this work. I'll just name a couple things that I believe I'm really good at. So one, I focus on outcomes. I know how to build a program and focus on outcomes. So you'll get reports from me. Legislators will hear about people in their district and how the issues that we're working on impact their communities. I believe that, and in the simplest terms, that our liberation is bound to each other. So, I think there's a lot of genius that comes with having the African immigrant community and the Black community being consolidated under one council, so we can talk about the barriers and the issues that our communities share in common and use creative strategies to talk about the areas where our communities do have real tensions. I also will say that some of my strengths that I bring to the table is as a manager, I'm empathetic and consistent, and I know how to build structures to hold people accountable. And then the last thing, there's a bunch of stuff I could say, but the last thing I really want to focus on is that nothing happens up here without relationships. And, I've seen you in the community, Chair Pappas, and I've worked with a lot of legislators on both sides of the aisle, and I'm committed to making sure that the work we do with the council is work that is clearly defined as it makes all Minnesota better. And that I want to build those relationships here, I want to build them in the community, and make sure that we all work together.
Madam Chair, I think he pretty well covered the first question with his introductory comments.
Oh, yeah, right, he did. Yeah, that was kind of the introductory. Right.
All right.
Okay, Representative Vogel.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. So I get the first
You get the second one. Yeah, first official. Right.
Official question, yes. Could you tell us a little bit about your experience working with the Minnesota Legislature, meeting with members and staff, and testifying in front of committees, please?
Yeah, absolutely. I've testified several times in front of committees. Primarily, my background is working on criminal justice, so yeah, typically I've testified at the Public Safety Committee in the State House. Obviously, I've sat in on committees in the Senate, but I've testified less on that side. also, I've worked on several policies that have advanced to the legislature. So we've built support for a restoration of voting rights policy that passed three times in the Senate. We've built support for that bill in the House as well, with nine Republicans recently signing on to it last session. I will say that the thing that I'm really uniquely skilled at is bringing both sides of the aisle together to have powerful conversations, not debates, but powerful conversations. And so we have had legislators meet in North Minneapolis to meet with folks to talk about the reopening of a private prison in Appleton. And we also had, after there was a big incident that I probably shouldn't talk about, but that happened during the legislature, I was the person who got on the phone and called members in Appleton, Minnesota, and talked to them about the impact of that prison and what jobs look like in their community, as opposed to just riding the line of some other radical groups and saying, talking about some of the more divisive talking points. We actually built relationships with people on the ground in those districts. In Tim Miller's district, we actually built a relationship with Representative Tim Miller, and as well as Tony Cornish, who I tend to talk to those guys a lot about the work that we've done. And,
thank you.
Okay, thank you. How would you approach a legislator who? Oh, this you've almost already answered this question. How would you approach a legislator who holds different views to the council's position?
I mean, that's expected, right? We're all, if all of us had the same ideas, there's no use for us to be in the conversation. So, Madam Chair, I would just say that it's expected that people are going to disagree. My job is really to just build those relationships and maintain those relationships so that we can find areas where we can agree and can align. Also, I want to make sure that if we disagree and it becomes a bigger issue, if it's one of the more like hot button topics. My job is really to represent the community and just be clear about how we can translate what the community is saying to the legislature. And that's just that. If we don't build the support, we don't build the support. But, you know, because there's a lot of conflicting interest, right? And once you're in relationship with folks and you understand where people stand, you gotta respect that. So that's kind of how I approach it. You know, obviously I care about my community. I'm gonna fight doggedly for my community. But I know that without relationships and understanding where people are at, you're not gonna get anything done up here. So.
Thank you. Senator Benson.
Yes. You're going to be leading an organization that's gone through some turmoil and frankly spent the last 6 months with not even an interim director, as we just heard. So please tell us about an experience you've had where you needed to institute significant change in the way an organization works. What were some challenges? How did you overcome them? And it's a lot for one question, but have you given any thought to how you're going to approach day one at the African Heritage Council?
Absolutely, Madam Chair, Senator Benson. My day one is about sitting down with my board members and figuring out their vision of greatness for the council. Day one is about sitting down with staff, with legislators who relate to the council, and figuring out like what is the full picture. I just think the first actually like 60 to 90 days is a lot of like one-on-one conversations. I'm not gonna fall into the trap of trying to build my own legislative agenda. I want to build a legislative agenda that comes from the community, that comes from figure out what people are working on at the Capitol already, and trying to make sure that people start to see the council as a organization that adds value and isn't just coming in as a distraction. pardon me. Are there other parts of the question?
And just go back to the first one. It's about you talked about day one and how you're going to approach your legislative agenda, but if you're in an organization that has struggled a little bit, what are you going to do?
So I've been in the situation multiple times, actually. As a youth worker, I took over a program called Youth Empowerment in Action, and it was struggling, right? I was struggling for resources. I was able to bring on a Hennepin County contract that allowed us to work with people aging out of foster care and the juvenile detention centers. Juvenile detention, so which is JDAI, as you guys would know it, back when that first started. And you know, really just put together a team, build structures for people, for your staff to be able to, like, when I say structures, I know that I should probably pick a better word, but honestly, people just need to know, like, what are the confines around their job, and like, where is the area that where they can become more creative, and tap into their creative energy. And I'm just really, as a manager, I'm somebody who's really about holding people accountable, and also really like holding folks, because through accountability, people understand what they do good at their job, as well as like these are things we got to work on. And so that's my management style. So in my most recent job, the Justice for All program, I came into that work day one with a list of 83 people that I was supposed to use for a corporate campaign with Target Corporation, right? Not only did we like build out that list of folks statewide, we got into a positive relationship with Target where it's not adversarial, but we like worked together on other criminal justice issues, that stuff that hasn't made it into the news. But along the way, I also built a program that's developed organizers that have gone on and done amazing work in the community. I've built a program where today, you know, as opposed to 83 people, I think my most recent count was like 794 people. We've engaged with 115 of them over the last month, right? So like a very active program that produces real outcomes as far as like how we move people. And as far as policy goes, like we've had several victories as well. Bipartisan victories, I would add. So,
Representative Carlson,
I have a question, and it'll be a good question to build on what you were saying earlier. But if you could describe more specifically your managing experience dealing with an organization, and perhaps include as far as the managing part of it. What's your background is in managing budgets?
Yeah, absolutely.
So kind of a two-part question there.
Yeah. Could you just name the two parts again? The second one was budget.
Well, the first is your experience managing an organization, and then secondly, when you're dealing with a state agency, well, any experience you might have, but in particular, you do have a significant budget to manage as part of the council. $400,000, I think, is the amount.
Yeah.
So what's your experience is in managing budgets? Because public budgets are a little different ballgame than some other entities you might have worked for.
Yeah, so Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, I so current my recent job, the budget that I managed was $500,000, and I was on the hook to raise that money primarily from national funders and from local funders and then individual donations as well. Pardon me. And my general philosophy around money is that your budget is a reflection of your values, not just necessarily how you spend it, but also who you get it from. And so with this being a public entity, like, and we're using tax dollars, you know, I want to be as transparent as possible what we, you know, how we pursue dollars from the legislature and also what we spend them on. I want to be an example to other organizations, particularly Black-led organizations, around how we report on the money that we use as well. And so I have a lot of experience with fundraising that I can talk about, but I think it's if I get the gist of your question, it's really more about, like, how do we manage the funds? Is that correct?
Well, just what your experience in managing funds would be, and you referenced you had a position where you managed a $500,000 budget, which is close to the amount here. But there are still certain rules and regulations when you're dealing with a state agency as well. That's what I meant by it's a little different animal sometimes than you might have experienced in the private nonprofit or private sector. But part of that question, the first part of it, was your actual experience in running an organization. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to deal with any number of issues when you're the captain of the ship, so to speak. Some of them might be personnel. Some of them, as I asked, might be budgetary. So if you could expand on your experience in that regard. I think you've touched on the budget well enough.
So as a manager, I have a lot of experience. I've managed 20 employees. I've managed two or one employee, kind of a great span. And like I said earlier, my management style is to be empathetic and understand where people on your team are coming from. Understand that, like, people have lives outside of their jobs, and that impacts what they do at work. The second is to be consistent. Just like consistent management, I'm sure everyone in this room has had someone who's been an inconsistent manager, and how hard that can be. So I just try to be consistent so people know where I'm coming from, and then. Last is just, you know, build structures that people know how to be successful at their job. So that's my philosophy in general. As far as, like, running an organization and being the captain of the ship, I'm always the captain of my ship. I am somebody who, I have definitely done a good job of building infrastructure in my most recent job to the point where, you know, a lot of people didn't realize it was part of the organization it was a part of. And that was a good thing for a lot of like bipartisan work we were able to do, but it also meant I had to raise more money. So my goal was $500,000, but I had to raise more than that, right, to re-grant to Black-led organizations in the community and managing a coalition of folks in the community as well. So it's not just even the structures of the program; it's also managing a coalition and all those personalities, wonderful personalities, and dynamics that brings into play as well. I think the best way to talk about it is, I'm somebody that values having command of my projects. Not that I'm a control freak, but that I'm strategic, and I know that I got the right people around me. But, like, there needs to be quite clarity around what direction we're headed, and I think that as an executive, that's something that you got to be able to hold on to, so that people know where the ship is headed.
Yeah. By the way, when I said captain of the ship, I didn't mean that I was looking for somebody that would necessarily be top down. And I think you've handled the question quite well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Number six, Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you tell us your perspective on what the role of the African American Heritage Council is, and maybe even perspective, vision? Where do you see it going? What would you like to see it be?
Absolutely. Madam Chair, Representative Vogel, I will say that my understanding of the council and statute, it's that we are here to advise the legislature and the governor's office on matters pertaining to the African heritage community. That's my paraphrase. And the way that I see it is that you know, also that we're to be a bridge for the community to be at the Capitol. My experience at the Capitol, you know, we need more representation from communities of color at the Capitol who are not just like here to spectate, but are here to actually like participate in their democracy. So that's, I mean, I plan to do the work of the statute, and I plan to be a bridge to the community. At the last board meeting, I asked some of the board members about their vision for the council. And I just think there's a lot of wisdom in making sure that, of course, I have my own vision, but I want it to be aligned with the folks who are doing the work as well. And so, you know, the couple that pop out, I don't have my notes in front of me, the couple things that popped out is that this would be the People's Council. And I really am excited about that, the idea that there's a council that's here that people can actually see themselves as part of. And so that's really my vision, is to make sure that the African immigrant farm family in Wilmer, the Sudanese family working at Hormel, the Northside family, who only has one job in the household and the rest is on public assistance or whatever, you know, that all those families have a space and a voice at the Capitol.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. I think he's really covered number 7 and 8. So I'm going to skip to 9. So, Justin, what was the most challenging personnel issue you've had to deal with, and how did you handle it? We all have these personnel issues.
Obviously, Madam Chair. There's a lot of ways I can answer this question. Do you mind if I just give two short
answers? Yeah, and don't give names, obviously.
Obviously. So, you know, I've had to make the decision of terminating employment, and that's never an easy decision to make. I will tell you that in my recent role, everyone I hired was a person of color, and everyone I hired was a person with a criminal record. So terminating someone under those conditions, like, I knew I was sending that person into a workforce that was not going to be kind towards them. However, like, it is better to make that decision when you know that this person is not doing the job, B, not happy about learning how to do the job, and that there's just real consequences to that, and the cost of pulling that Band-Aid off is less than leaving it on for a long time where nothing's going to get done. So I've had to make that difficult decision, and that person is not my biggest fan, but I will tell you that I am their biggest fan, and that they've gone on to do some really powerful work in the community, and I continue to support them. Mm-hmm. The other story I'll tell is that I hesitate to tell is, you know, I worked with a young lady who honestly is probably the most dynamic organizer I've ever met. And she and I both started work together, and we were both very inexperienced. We both learned a lot together. She had to call me out on a lot of my patriarchy, and I had to learn about, you know, what it meant to be a strong black man supervising a strong black woman. And I learned a ton from that relationship. And that person has gone on to lead some of the most dynamic work our city has seen, you know, in a long time. And so it's an example. I tell that story just because I'm not someone who's afraid of tension. I'm not someone who's afraid to learn from the people I supervise. And at the end of the day, like, I'm a believer. Like, I believe in people more than I probably should, some people say. I am an optimist, and you know, I think my faith informs that. And so it means that I'm a lifelong learner, and I'm willing to learn from the folks around me, even when I'm supervising them. And so I kind of would like to tell more of that story, but I feel like we should move on.
Okay. Senator Benson, number 10.
Tell us about your experience working with the Board of Directors. What is your philosophy, the way you operate when working with the board, and have you recruited board members? And if so, what's your criteria, your approach?
Yeah, so, Madam Chair, Senator Benson, I'll just say that I haven't actually done the work of recruiting board members before, which is just being honest. I've served on several boards, and I've managed a small coalition, which, you know, in some ways operates like a board, and then also a small, like, leadership team that was in charge of my program, which also operates similar to a board. But my experience of being a board member and working with staff is just that everyone joins a board for a different reason, right? Some people are looking for experience and want to use their expertise. Other folks are there because of a favor to a friend, right? And then other people are there because they want to learn how to raise money and support a cause that they really care about. Whatever it is, as the manager or the executive director who's responsible to that board, you have to sit down and get to know those people and figure out where they're coming from and why they're on your board. That's like number one, is figuring out what people care about. And then once you know their strengths, like making sure you set up ways for them to use their strengths. I've been to a lot of board meetings that waste a lot of time where folks aren't prepared. And I just want to establish a high standard of excellence as far as how we run our board meetings. And then as far as recruiting board members, the way I look at it is I would just look for what we're missing and who's willing to do the work. I think the council has an interesting structure where, you know, the board members actually, I've experienced this from going to a board meeting, board members actually want to do the work, right? They're not just an oversight board where they're there to just make sure that the numbers on the spreadsheet add up. There's some boards like that. Mm-hmm. This isn't one of them. And so and my experience with committees are a lot more like that. And so, you know, I plan on investing in this board. That's my vision. I'm going to invest in these folks and make sure they get a lot out of being on this board.
Thank you. Representative Carlson?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. The question I'm going to ask you here is one that you touched on a bit with the very first one, but I'd like you to expand on it a bit. And if you could tell us about your experience working with elected officials, and you've referenced that several times, the importance of it. And you did mention a couple of situations where you'd worked with some legislators. But what is your experience working with elected officials of a different party affiliation than yours? And I think you mentioned at least once in one in the introductory comments that you had worked with. But if you could, like I say, expand on that role, because I think that's this question is one of the important ones relative to the history of the position, making sure that the director does develop those relationships.
Absolutely. So, Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, I will tell you that before I start talking about my relationship with legislators, I'll just name that, like, my mentor is a 85-year-old, white, wealthy, conservative Christian Republican who lives in Brainerd, Minnesota. And his wife, like, literally served on city council in Appleton, Wisconsin. And I learned politics from them, to be honest. And I am not a 85-year-old Christian conservative, white Republican. But I understand that there are things that bring people together, issues that we care about, and that's kind of how I come to the table. I know that politics gets sloppy, but it didn't stop me from getting Representative Zerwas to come to the Take Action Minnesota annual meeting and sit at a table with Pam Calagiri, whose son is incarcerated, and hearing his story, right? And Representative Zerwas appreciated that. It doesn't stop me from sitting down with Representative Miller after we debated each other on NPR about the Appleton prison for 45 minutes after the program had ended. We sat down for 45 minutes and talked about his background coming from Chicago and his experience with the black community and really just building a relationship, trying to get to know each other. You know, the politics is how people get things. It's who gets what and how, right? And that's just the nature of how we decide things in our society. What I care about is my community, and I'm not here. Like, I could care less about. I would not be effective at this job if I were here to be some sort of rubber stamp for the progressive community or someone who only relates and like runs and only talks to Senator Jeff Hayden. Like, that's not how you're going to be effective at this job. And the cost of that is our community, our state, it has some serious problems when it comes to communities of color, and I'm about that the business of addressing those problems. And so we got to work with everybody, and I'm not begrudgingly trying to do that. I'm like anxious to do that. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, very, very well. Thank you.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Leads really nicely into the next question, which is if you could tell us briefly what the most significant issues are facing that community, and then what role do you see the council as playing in addressing those issues?
Yeah, absolutely. Give me one moment. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Vogel. So I just want to make sure I get my numbers right because there's a lot of them. So first, really how I describe this is a couple different ways. First, the way things are in the state is not an accident. You don't get to a 5% population of African Americans that make up 35% of the prison population by accident. Like there are real structures in play that send us down a path where those kind of things happen. The same is true for issues out if you're just thinking about not issues that aren't so focused on racial disparities, like what's going on in farm country right now, right? Or greater Minnesota, however you want to look at it. The way we got here isn't an accident. We made specific decisions and policy decisions that get us into a situation like this. And I want to say that because that means we can address them. These are people-made problems. They can be solved by people as long as we're willing to do the work. So some of the issues that I'll just reference the most recent report where you have, our population is the 22nd smallest in the country as far as African Americans go. And we're talking about a median income of $30,000 versus $66,000 for white folks. You're talking about that kind of wealth gap, right, creates issues in communities where people aren't able to sustain or take care of their families. We know that housing is an issue. Unemployment is double that for more than double than that for white folks, for African Americans. And the issues go on and on and on. I think, for me, I don't see this an issue of Minnesota being this terrible place run by a bunch of evil white folks. Like, these are just structural issues. These are things that happen based on how we structure our workforce, based on how we structure our criminal justice system, based on how we structure our healthcare program. And it just creates, opportunities for some communities, and it creates barriers in other areas. And so we need to be able to talk about that and figure out a way to address them. I'll just pause. Did I answer your question?
Yeah. Madam Chair?
Yeah.
Just a follow-up. How do you see the council playing a role in addressing them?
Yeah, I think what I've learned about legislators in over the last 5 years is it helps if you know what people in your community are dealing with. So one is creating that bridge and making sure folks from your community who are living these racial disparities are talking to you. Or even making sure that folks, that white folks in our state start to understand that our state economically is not sustainable if we don't find a way to make sure that everybody has access to employment and housing and those things, right? And also, I would also just name that a lot of what's going on in greater Minnesota in communities like Brainerd or Crosby area, as they're struggling with, uptick in crime and use of drugs and whatnot, or alcoholism or whatever, a lot of those issues, like, communities of color have had to deal with. And we've seen different systemic responses to them. And right now, I think it's an opportunity where I see an organization like the council being able to build a bridge in those communities as well, and saying, like, this is an opportunity for the council to kind of lead on issues that have impacted the black community in the past and help other communities around the state start to adapt new strategies. It's something I learned from being a social worker or in social services when we were building supports for homeless youth in the city. Well, no one was talking about that in greater Minnesota at the time, and we were having people drive into the city to get resources. Well, the council can talk about the impact of that on our community, of homelessness on our community, and start to build those kind of bridges and those kind of conversations in other communities as well.
Is that okay?
Just this one example.
Madam Chair, could I ask a quick follow-up?
Sure, Representative Carlson.
One area that I'm quite interested in, I'm a retired teacher.
Okay.
33 years in the classroom. I was waiting for you to say something about the achievement gap.
Yeah.
And we hear an awful lot about that, and if there's a role for the council in perhaps making some suggestions on how we approach that issue. We've got several school districts across the country, and including some here in Minnesota, that are really struggling with that issue.
Absolutely. Madam Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, I think the achievement gap is a huge issue, of course, and I you know, I don't have any like direct solutions. I'm not, you know, off the top of my head of how to address it, but I know that if we bring the right folks together to talk about it, I believe that the council can be a leader on it. I'm interested in hearing your ideas and the constituents in your community. I'm interested in hearing how they see it.
Madam Chair, basically my question was, did you see a role for, I wasn't soliciting a solution at this point in time. It's much more complex than that, but
right.
Was interested in whether you saw a role for the council, being that so many government agencies, mainly school districts, are struggling with the issue.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a yes or no. Do you see a role?
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, yes.
Oh, thank
absolutely.
You. Good.
Okay. That's what I meant, Madam Chair, when I was waiting for a reference to the achievement gap. Thank you.
Yeah,
yes.
That's an important issue. My turn. Minnesota's Black and African community consists of people from different countries, East, West, and South Africa, the Caribbean, the diaspora. How are you connected with these different communities, and what would you do to represent all these groups as the council's executive director?
Yeah. So, Madam Chair, this is a very important question. I would say that the how am I connected? You mm-hmm. know, I grew up in a Nigerian church. I grew up in the Phillips neighborhood, which is one of the most diverse communities in the state. And so, you know, our favorite game to play when we were kids is to go to your friend's house, figure out, and see what it smells like, because if it smelled good, that's where we're eating that night. The other trick was learning how to curse each other out in their own language. So, but I think, so like, that's kind of my background. It's just, you know, a lot of time in the West African community. As far as work goes, definitely have worked, done a lot of work in Brooklyn, in the Brooklyns, and worked with AIS and ACER. Have worked with, you know, Representative Omar on some issues as well before she ran for office, and I struggle with this question because it's not a super complicated question, but it is, because the way I look at it is that if I were to sit up here and tell you that I could somehow magically bring all those groups together under one banner, I just don't think that's truthful. But what I do know I can do is I can go into the community, I can listen to folks, I can figure out like where do we align, figure out what are the groups that we can kind of coalesce around. There's a lot of people doing work at the Capitol already, right? So CURE or Down South, there's WU, and there's all these organizations that are trying their best to advocate for the African diaspora. And I think it's on the council to really build a relationship with those organizations doing the work and figuring out how to be a tool for them at the Capitol. And so, and then we have other issues to address as far as like how all those groups relate to each other and relate to the African American community. Mm-hmm. And I'm hungry to facilitate some of those conversations as well, because I think that's where we could build some powerful relationships.
All right, thank you. And Senator Benson.
This position requires that the director be perceived as nonpartisan. Could you tell us about activities you're involved in that might affect this perception? And I'm going to take some liberties. We do have your resume.
Yeah.
And so if somebody looks at your resume, they're going to say, oh, he's a partisan. So maybe instead of focusing on those positions, you talk to us about how you transitioned to an executive, nonpartisan, engaging on issues role, if you can help dispel some myths that are going to come out of your resume. I think that might be a more effective answer to the question.
Chair, Senator Vincent, I appreciate the question. It's important. I'll reiterate what I said earlier, and just that being partisan in this position would mean I would be ineffective. And so, and I'm clear about that, and I'm dedicated to being effective for my community. And so that's the attitude I bring to this position. As far as the work that I've done, obviously, like, I work for a partisan organization. It's a nonpartisan organization, but that has a reputation for being very partisan. And the program I built was very much so. We worked across the aisle with folks nonstop, and so
you're talking about the Justice for All
program. Yeah, on criminal justice reform. So, like, I will tell you that criminal justice reform is a bipartisan issue. There's groups called like Right to Work, and you know, Wayne LaPierre is advocating for criminal justice reforms. The Koch brothers, all those, and through my national work, the work that I've done nationally, in D.C. and with organizations around the country, the same is true. I've worked with every step of the way on bipartisan work, bipartisan issues, and where we disagree and didn't align, you know, we just kept moving, basically. And so that's the kind of attitude I would bring to this, is just to be clear that, like, I'm interested in win-wins, and not not being a rubber stamp for the progressive community. So that, do you have more?
I think your tone is kind of what we needed to hear, that you understand to be effective, you know, you have to take a step into an executive position. And so I'm content with that answer.
Great. And then we have another one from Representative Carlson.
Yep, Madam Chair. Again, I seem to be hitting questions that you've touched on a bit already, but so in light of expanding on it a bit, but why are you interested in the position? Maybe if you can kind of bring that down a bit. You touched on that earlier in your comments, but
yeah, absolutely. I think the thing that I haven't really said, Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, I believe that, for lack of better words, this is a sense of calling. I come into this work as somebody who, you know, from my social service days, have seen a lot of people struggle through crisis, and I've recognized that there's only so much I can do one-on-one to help people navigate that. And I see the council as an opportunity to bring a whole bunch of folks into their democracy as a way to address much bigger issues that will impact the community. And I believe the work that we do to empower or advance the African heritage community will advance the entire state. And selfishly, I'll be honest, like, I want to lead that. I want to lead that body of work. And I believe that my skills as a program manager, as an executive, what have you, my leadership skills are what this council needs for this moment, to build new structures, to develop a staff, to invest in the board, to build relationships with the legislature and the governor's office. I think it's my time to lead, to be honest. It's why I want this job.
Before I take our last question, I wanted to see if any members of the subcommittee had any other questions they wanted to ask, and I'll start out because I had one. And how do you see your, I see Sia here from the Asian Pacific Council is here, and how do you see your relationship to the other councils of color?
Yeah, so I'm really excited about working with Sia and with Henry and getting to know the other councils. I believe that, one, like, we've watched them through the reorganization and through work last session, I've just watched them really, for lack of better words, just step their game up. And I feel like there's some pressure on me to come in and do the same. And I think that there's a lot of ways we could collaborate. You know, I'm interested in, you know, how do we work together to lead statewide conversations with communities of color outside of the Twin Cities, right? I'm interested in how do we Because, you know, we all have reporting duties, right? So January 15th, the report's due. How do we use those reports to kick off conversations about the disparities in our community? I'm kind of tired of the regular, you know, Minnesota's great if you are, if you're white, and it's terrible if you're not. Let's talk about the work we're doing together, right? Let's talk about the path that we're walking down to become a better state. And I would believe that that kind of narrative, I will need some pretty big partners on to advance. And I see the other councils as partners in that. And then, honestly, I have a lot to learn. This would be my first executive director position, and so I would be looking to them to learn what I can about how to be most effective in this position.
Thank you. Anybody else have any other questions? Then, Justin, do you have any questions or comments for us? Any questions for us?
I do, Madam Chair. First, I just want to say thank you for your time. This has been a long process, and I'm really dedicated to making sure that we get this right, and working with folks to make sure that we do the work that needs to be done. My question for you guys is really for this committee is, you know, what is it that you're looking for in an executive director, and how do you want them to show up at the Capitol?
I can start with that. Certainly we've asked, a lot of our questions have indicated what we're looking for, right, is that bridge between the community and the legislature. So we are seeing people from the African and African American community feeling comfortable that they know the system, they know how to come, how to testify, how to sign up, how to, you know, have events here, how to meet with legislators, how to talk about issues. So it's kind of that lobbying role, so that we're in touch with what the community is interested in. And also somebody that can handle, your communities can often be, like many, controversial and have a lot of conflicts, and someone who can kind of navigate through those controversies and yet stay above them and help mediate that. We really need some stability from this council. It's been a rough couple years, as Representative Moran knows. And to, we don't want any, certainly we don't want any sexual harassment. We don't want any scandals. We don't want any, problems. That's why your management style is so important to us, that you really know how to manage people and how to handle when you do have a problem employee, and how to get them to not become a problem employee, perhaps, or maybe recognize it's time to move on. Because we want you to be, most of all, we want you to be successful, and we want you to be effective.
Anybody else want to add anything? Senator Benson?
I would add, you talked about disparities and, Minnesota's great if you're white, and it's not if you're minority. I would love to see your early successes come through. These are executable strategies that we can implement, so that the members of your community that you're bringing to the Capitol, that you're bridging with, can see that we're serious about making change, but change that they embrace and helps them move to where you ultimately want them to be and where they want to be, so that all Minnesotans can be successful. And so sometimes it feels like our solutions are boil the ocean. We talk about huge things that need to change. But if you can really, I think Senator Pappas talked about your executive style being successful, but I also think we need to see solid things, so that your community knows that you're effective, so that we can see you're effective, and that we can actually start making those incremental changes, so we can measure success on what is going to be a long journey.
Yeah, I liked what you said about an outcome focus, so that you take on kind of manageable issues so that you can demonstrate success, because, you know, we can't solve all the problems of the world. So let's look at what we can solve.
I would just very quickly say what I hope will happen is that you're able to bring people together, because it's been a very diverse community that the council represents. And what I mean by that, with a lot of different viewpoints historically. And so the ability to bring people together would be important. Another issue, and Senator Pappas pointed that out, is to become a bridge between the legislature, public policymakers, and the community. And then greater visibility. I'll just use myself as an example. I was aware of the council. I was here when it was created. Didn't have a whole lot of contact with it until I was on state government finance. And that's where the budget went through. And I would say that would be true of all the councils. But, you know, on that committee, because we dealt with the funding and so on for the various councils, then that group became fairly knowledgeable. And I became much more knowledgeable than I had been as a result of being on that committee. So when I talk about visibility, I think we have to make sure that the council and all of the councils build that bridge with the legislature. I remember talking to a member a year or two ago, because I had been here and when it was established, what our expectations were at the time. And I don't think they were too different than what I just outlined here when I had that conversation.
I think mission creep has been a real problem in the past with the councils, where they try to be all things to all people, and to recognize that, yeah, you were really created to help the legislature, you know, and the executive branch, too. But we obviously are focused on assistance for the legislature, and that other entities in the community maybe should be organizing the banquets and, you know, the celebrations, and because you have a small staff and you have limited time, so being able to kind of focus your work and look at what your, you know, your top mission is, and then if there's, you know, your board members who want to organize something and there's time to do that, fine. But I think that's going to be really important to focus. Okay, great. Thank you very much, then.
Thank you for your time.
Mr. Hope Hubinger will be in touch with you. Greg, are you coming back?
Yes.
I had a question. Anybody else have any comments? I did want to ask Greg about his references before we have a motion.
Briefly, and I don't think this will
Senator Benson
impact Greg. I'm a little concerned about the partisan nature of his resume. He seems to grasp that this is about accomplishing policy goals, and so I think he's seriously enough. One of the, and I don't know when we're going to move this resolution, but I wanted to raise, I think it would have been more helpful for me to be highly supportive of whoever we move forward if I had a chance to sort of compare and contrast what the council considered. You know, if I had someone who, even if we could have looked at the resumes of the individuals, so we could have had some sense of the filtering that went on, who applied, and what their qualifications were. I don't know that we're going to get anybody with more experience, or I don't know if there's anybody out there. So that makes me pause just a minute. It's not a specific detriment to this candidate. It just would have been helpful for me to be more confident in my decision.
And I am kind of looking at his resume, too, because I was looking for the kind of concerned about the partisan aspect. So he talks about electoral work that he did, working on a few campaigns, House campaigns. But also when he talked about it, a lot of his employment has not been, I would call it, pretty nonpartisan. You know, the PPL Learning Center as a placement specialist, the training coordinator at Emerge Community Development, Catholic Charities, the Bridge for Youth. Doesn't seem like they're really paid partisan positions.
Right. And Madam Chair, since 2012, he has been employed at Take Action, which has a reputation for being active on the progressive side.
And they certainly have an electoral arm,
and
you know, a CL14.
Right.
Madam Chair, they do have electoral impact. So
I'm glad you asked him that question, and he was able to respond about his work as a program manager for Justice for All.
Right.
Was more bipartisan in its approach.
And I think, Madam Chair, that he understands the seriousness and importance mm-hmm. of the council helping the legislature achieve goals and him running an organization well. I got the sense he understood that the gravity of this position, but with the stumbling and faltering that's been happening mm-hmm. as of late, he seems to have sufficient seriousness that he will focus on that part and less on some of his activism.
I think you're right. So, Mr. Hubinger, I had a question about the references. Are they included? Did I miss them in the packet, or did you want to just tell us a little bit about it?
Madam Chair, members,
they were just phone call references?
He was asked to provide references, and staff talked to two of the three. Mm-hmm. One notable was Justin gave us the name of the vice president for HR for Target Corporate, because mm-hmm. he worked with that organization a lot on the Band of Ox program. Mm-hmm. And I had a conversation with him. He was very positive about his work with Justin, how respectful it was, how much they trusted each other, they worked together. They disagreed on a lot of things, but they always had a positive approach and very respectful conversations. Mm-hmm. And he was a strong supporter.
Great. And then who was the other reference?
It was a mentor that he's known for many years. I'm not sure if it was the person that he referred to mm-hmm. in Bemidji.
He said Brainerd.
I'm sorry?
He said Brainerd.
Brainerd, mm-hmm. one of those B ones.
Yeah.
that they worked together on a number of community-based programs. He thought that he was well-connected with the community, strong sense of fairness. Is able to navigate the different communities about their different interests and get them to find common ground.
Mm-hmm. This mentor, what was his? Do you know his background?
I don't.
Okay. You just had a name.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it does seem to me that in Justice providing the references, he was, again, conscious of picking someone who is nonpartisan or bipartisan that would stress those aspects. And so I think he does realize the importance of that.
Madam Chair, I was just going to say that second reference there seemed to stress his ability to bring a diverse group together. That was one of the points that I pointed out that I was hopeful that he would be able to do when he was asking us questions. And it's interesting that that was that reference comment about that was a skill area that he had.
Did you have something?
I did.
Yeah, Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Wondering if Mr. Musa or Representative Moran might come back to the table, or maybe both.
Proceed.
Okay, thank you. You know, relative to the senator's questions on the political activities and so forth, and obviously I had noticed that as well, I really liked what I heard. I like the vision that's being expressed, and I like the way even looking at Greater Minnesota with the Twin Cities area and all. But I'm just curious if you guys have, you people as a board, have had a discussion on that, and if indeed it would start to go maybe a little toward some of the other things that, you know, that might reflect some of the past, how if you have that discussion, or if you haven't, how you might keep it on track so that, again, we don't run into an issue where we have a political rift again and we're not making as much headway as we should.
Madam Chair and Representative, thank you so much for that question. The board had really long discussion about all types of skills and political affiliation as well. We also discussed about the nonpartisan works, because some applicants that applied, they are clearly on one side of the aisle, and I personally as a chair, because I do want to make sure that the council fulfill the requirement of the work for the people, not for the Democrat, not for the Republican, but making sure that educate all legislatures equally and also address issues in an equal perspective. That was my clear line, specifically when I had asked a question several applicants who applied at the community session, and also we had the board session where three applicants came and then discussed about their skills and qualifications. So it's very clear to me that I want to make sure that we have responsibility to accomplish that, the people's work, in nonpartisan manner.
Representative Moran.
Yes, Madam Chair, representatives. So I'm going to share a story. And the story is about the last executive director that we have that you guys brought forward, and who was not really informed or knew the legislative process. And so I met with them because it's really important to me that they know the work of the council is a work to be bipartisan. And so a lot of my time was spent just trying to mentor him around that process, who was in the majority, how you need to engage them, why it was important to engage them. And even after those conversations, he would come back to me and say, well, I talked to someone in the community, and they said it's no reason to talk to Republicans. I'm like, wait a minute. First, we are nonpartisan. Second, they're in the majority. Third, it is really important that you are here to advise the legislative body and the governor on the issues that are impacting the community. And that means you do that in a very bipartisan way. And when we was interviewing Justin, it was really clear that he knew that process. Even with his work at Take Action Minnesota, what he did is he brought in Representative Zerwas, right? And to me, he brought that into a community that is like, he's like my folks, right? But he was really clear that the work that he needed to do was about policy and not about party. And he took the time to get to know them, to build a relationship with them. And I think that's important. And the council know the importance that our ED, that's the work of the ED, to see this work through the eyes of a nonpartisan lens and do the work of engaging legislators on both sides of the aisles on the issues that are impacting the Black community. And for me, that was a strength that he really, really had. And he has, you know, he talked about his mentor being an 85-year-old white guy who was a Republican. I mean, those things are important because he gets to know the importance of that relationship, or how to engage, how to talk to them, how to include them in whatever the issue is, and to learn from them. And so, for me, and I think for many of the councils, we saw that, we heard that, and we know how important that we get this and we do that type of work.
Thank you.
Okay, in our packet, we do have a resolution. If you want to make sure you have that resolution, and then I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Representative Carlson moves that the Legislative Coordinating Commission Subcommittee on Ethnic Councils appoint Justin Terrell as the Executive Director of the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage, direct staff to determine other terms and conditions of employment under the Managerial Compensation Plan, and direct staff to communicate this appointment to the Council. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Justin Terrell is your new Executive Director. Good job, and thank you so much, Mr. Musa, Representative Moran, and to all the search committee members and the council and the community for all the time and work they put into this. It was a tremendous job, and I wish Mr. Terrell every success. So hopefully we will all see him in our offices very shortly.
Soon.
All right, thank you. And with that, the committee is adjourned. Subcommittee is adjourned.